HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 174, recorded live Thursday, July 30th, 2009. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode of Hansel Minutia, Scott talks with Richard Campbell.
This is Scott Hanselman. You're listening to Hansel Minutes, and with me today is Scott Hanselman.
Hi, Scott.
Hi, Scott.
How are you, Scott?
I'm well.
You, your voice has changed.
Yeah, I've gotten older and wiser.
And Canadian.
Now you're just making fun of me.
Well, that's true. Richard Campbell, thank you so much for coming on the show for another episode of Hansel Minutia with Richard Campbell.
Always a pleasure, sir.
Very cool. Someone told me once on Twitter that they were getting tired of putting the word Hansel in front of stuff. They think that they think it's a little overplayed, and I think it is hilarious.
Yeah,
it's my revenge for being called Hansel Dork in high school.
Now, yeah, we're listening to some Hansel Minutes, and you got me logged into a very cool tool that I've never heard of before called Etherpad.
Yeah. I'm a remote worker, so I'm always trying to do things remotely.
Right.
And I spend a lot of time in Notepad or Notepad Plus or Plus or Notepad 2, and I always end up trying to share my Notepad to somebody, because what I really want is to be able to just do multi-person editing. And what this is called Etherpad, Ether like Ethernet, but E-T-H-E-R, pad. So I've got an Etherpad where you and I can both basically hit the same website at a very easy to remember URL, and we can be editing, and it'll automatically highlight our text. So it's some of the multi-person editors of the past, except with a web and Ajaxy twist. So we're looking at our notes for today's show here on the Etherpad, and I think it's great. And as a remote worker, it's going to make collaboration a lot easier, especially for brainstorming.
I've done a lot of brainstorming with OneNote. I don't know if you've ever played with that. We throw OneNote up on the projector, and you can actually have two people connected to the same document at the same time. One guy's the host, and the other one's sort of a guest.
Oh, you can do that.
And you can type to each other. But the problem was, whenever we were brainstorming, we always insisted everyone participates, so no secretaries are allowed.
Oh, I like that.
And so there always need to be two people taking notes, so that if one of the persons that could take notes wanted to contribute, there was somebody else to take those notes.
Mm. Is it limited to two people? Or you said you can have unlimited?
As far as I know, it's limited to two people, because it's just sort of a free thing that happens with two people who have a OneNote account. They can just connect up and both contribute to the thing.
And it works over the internet, or it's an intranet?
It was an intra, within the network kind of thing. We'd have the OneNote up on the big screen as well.
Right.
But it was, I wouldn't function without it. I'm surprised how hooked I am on OneNote. All my show planning is done with OneNote.
Really? I'm an Evernote person.
And I don't know what Evernote is.
Ah, scandalous. We all know what OneNote is. OneNote is the note-taking application that comes with Office, and it's been in Office since, I think, 2003. It's had a lot of upgrades, and it's even shinier in Office 14. But Evernote is a note-taking application that has kind of distinguished itself through its ubiquity across platforms. So there's a Windows mobile version, there's an iPhone version, there's a very nice web version. There are bookmarklets that you can drag, little JavaScript snippets that you can drag into the bookmarks of your browser. And it's also got some hotkeys, just a lot like OneNote. But it's synchronized into the cloud. So it's like OneNote, although OneNote's getting cloud synchronization, but everything is stored in the cloud. And it also doesn't just have text notes, but also audio and picture notes. And what's cool about the picture notes is that you take a picture of something, and somewhere magically that information gets OCR'd, optical character recognition, gets read by a computer. So then when you go searching for something, it'll find the text and highlight it on the picture itself.
That to me sounds like the sort of claim to fame of this app is snapping an image with some device and then having the OCR be searchable.
Exactly. And, you know, the person who told me about this idea of snapping images of everything was Scott Cate. He has a Sony camera that he carries around with him everywhere, and he takes pictures of everything. I was like, well, everything? Yes, everything. He takes pictures of receipts. He takes pictures of the hotel bill, and then he puts all that stuff on the computer. Now, he's using a nice quality camera. When I can get 3, 4, and 5 megapixels on a phone, then I'm finally down to one device, and if it's hooked up to Evernote, this will be a really nice way to I'm looking at a pile of paper here. I'd love to take pictures of these business cards and different things, and have them OCR'd and be able to search for them. So
and then get rid of all the paper.
And, well, Yeah, isn't that funny? And then file the paper away for reference.
Oh, please save me. I file it away effectively for garbage.
Yeah, isn't it funny how I'm starting to treat my life like Gmail, where it's like there's an archive button.
Yeah.
And it's my trash can.
Yeah, off it goes.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, when we built the office, we put 4 good-sized file drawers in them, and you know they're filled with files.
Mm-hmm.
No idea what's in them anymore. I think we loaded them up, and we've never touched them since.
You know, the thing is, though, you never know. And this is why my wife handles this stuff for me. She's the receipt keeper. And I never take things back and then until I totally need the receipt and I'm taking something back. I think I take one item back to the store a year and
right.
I need to take this video game back. And, I have no idea where it is. My wife went directly to it. She knew exactly where it was. Apparently we keep everything. I had no idea. She may be pulling it out of the trash and filing it away.
Yeah. She may be just creating it on the fly, but it doesn't matter. It does what it's supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. So have you been following any of the portal stuff that I've been working on?
I have heard the phrase Hansel portal,
which we can't say now because we're going to lose listeners.
Yeah.
Hansel listeners.
Could we do the ActiveX portal? Could we just, substitute another term in that's very popular?
Ooh, this is an interesting concept that you've just invented. Is Hansel as a prefix the new ActiveX?
Or the new .NET. I think if they're getting tired of it, it's for that reason.
Well, I think ActiveX is a good example because it's that word that doesn't really mean anything anymore.
Absolutely.
Like it used to mean something and it was like their entire strategy and now it means nothing. So apparently Hansel used to mean something amazing and wonderful and now it's just sad. Like ActiveX.
Well, there's been lots of buzz phrases that Microsoft's manufactured over the years that just, mm-hmm. remember, Windows DNA?
What was that?
It just sort of went, we tried to make something go of it and it just sort of went away. Or when they lived everything or they .NETed everything.
Uh-huh. Well, that's why I like MVC, right?
Well,
we didn't call it, ASP.NET super duper version or something. We just call it MVC because that's what it was.
Yeah. It's actually a description of what it is. It's nothing more. But it's where I think code names stick around, right? Like a good code name is often better than the product name. It just won't go away.
Well, like Astoria. That's the greatest code name. I don't know why.
But it's mostly because the product name is dreadful.
ADO.NET data services.
Yes.
For Windows.
I still don't know what it is. The main thing you like about Astoria is you know what it is. Even though it's not descriptive, you know what it is.
Totally. I need a code name for my portal. I'm turning my head here, and I've got a machine set up where I can see Phil Hack in his office, and we're calling it the Hansel portal. We've dedicated 2 machines to this exercise, and I can see Phil's. He's got actually 2 people in his office. He's got a cubicle mate, and we've set that machine to automatically turn on. We've got a video on it, and I can just kind of say, "Hey, Phil, what's going on? What are you doing?"
It's so you're just there all the time. What's the app you're using to create the portal?
Well, in this case, we're using Skype, and the reason is that I couldn't figure out a way with Windows Live Messenger to have it automatically answer, automatically go full screen, and be high res. And Skype has the features that'll let you pick up the phone and go full screen. I'm considering using Office Communicator, which is our internal tool.
Right.
But it would require me to be logged in as me.
On the machine in Phil's office.
On the machine. And the issue is that machine in Phil's office is on the network, right? So I can't necessarily have someone logged in as me on a machine that I can't control 200 miles away.
Yeah, no.
So what we're doing is we've got a very weak user, as if, the kind of user you would set up if you were making a machine for like a small child. And this small child is allowed using the family safety features in Windows only to run Skype. And the Skype account is only allowed to talk to one other Skype account. So we've really locked the machine down to basically it can't do anything but run Skype.
I put an HP TouchSmart machine into the kitchen.
Ooh.
The big 25.
So you have the kind of disposable income that you would just say, let's get a TouchSmart machine because these Post-it notes are really a hassle.
But one of the things we've set up is an auto-connecting Skype for exactly that reason. So
really?
That when I'm on the road, I can pretty much just drop in and look into the kitchen.
That's wonderful and creepy.
It is kind of wonderful and creepy, especially catching my family at dinner. It's all like, bink, hi, guys.
It's funny that you say that because I think I mentioned this before on the show, but one time I did that where the wife had left the laptop on the kitchen and my 3-year-old said, Daddy, come out of the computer and have dinner.
That's brilliant. Oh, man. Hey, you kids come up with some good one-liners, actually. What
They're
is it?
Pretty
you,
good.
You have a site for this, don't you?
I actually have a whole site dedicated to my kids and to your kids' one-liners. It's called overheardathome.com.
Right.
And I've also got a Twitter account associated with it. And yeah, people just go to Overheard at Home. You know, it's interesting. It hasn't taken off the way I thought it would, because it's not like these other sites where it's like what is it called? Fail Blog. You seen the Fail Blog?
Yes.
Yeah. It's an entire blog dedicated to things failing horribly.
Yep.
That's like, you know, what's the word? Schadenfreude.
Yep. That's the word, right? Taking pleasure word? In the failure of others.
Exactly. It seems like all the sites that succeed on the net that are like crowdsourced, whether it be Failblog or other sites like it, are all dedicated to like, oh, what's the other one? Is it awfulfamilyphotos.com?
Yeah. I don't think I need to know about that one.
Basically, it's just like all those really horrible portraits that you took in the 90s of your family. These are all sites dedicated to Schadenfreude. Well, Overheard at Home is like kids say the darndest things.
Yeah, it's sweet.
So it's like every few years the newsman on who you know the newsreader on the TV says, now we're going to dedicate 30 seconds of each broadcast to good news. You know, the rest of the half hour of news will be all about death and destruction and bombs. But at the end here we'll say yes, and a flower grew in Brooklyn today. And then, of course, that always gets abandoned, right?
Yeah.
So my site is the same way. It's just full of nothing but cute stories of poop and babies, and no one visits it. So,
see, I've got teenagers, so the only thing they would say is, oh, Dad, and oh, my God, you're so embarrassing me.
Yeah, see, that would not be a compelling content.
Not so much. Yeah, I couldn't really build a website around that.
Which explains why soon my site, Overheard at Home, will appear on the Fail blog. As itself an example of a huge failure.
Yeah, there you go.
Nice. See how we did that full circle? That was beautiful.
Brought it all the way around. I like that.
I like that. It's very nice.
I almost think we knew what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
So Win7, yeah. RTM.
You know, it's funny. I just upgraded my portal to Win7 RTM, and interestingly enough, looks just like the release candidate. So
yeah. Well, and I'm on the outside. I'm not on the inside like some people.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I got to wait till I think August 8th. So we're in that terrible, I know it's released. I can't have it.
I think when we this show will be coming out on August 7th, so you only have to wait till tomorrow. So feel good about that.
I'm feeling better already.
Yeah, it's funny though. I asked my wife. I was like, "So can I upgrade your laptop?" And she's like, "You cannot touch my laptop."
Yeah, get away.
Yes. So it's the only machine in the house that's going to be running Vista, and the only reason is that it works fine.
Yeah, just have to wait till it breaks.
Yeah, exactly. Which interestingly enough, last night the wireless stopped working on her machine, but she's not blaming Microsoft. She blames Dell.
Okay. That's fair.
I think she should blame Intel because it's their wireless chip, but either way.
Now, what is it about Windows 7 that has everyone convinced that it's going to be better than Vista? You know, I did an interview recently on RunAS with Mark Manassi.
RunAS Radio, your podcast.
That's
for those
right.
People who don't listen to it, who should.
Thank you. And Manassi, as soon as I started talking along the lines of Win7, he said, if you don't have any empirical data about why it's better, don't talk to me about it. Because I didn't hate Vista, and I don't hate Win7, but I don't believe it's better. So trying to grab onto what is it about Win7 that's actually better.
Okay. So, you know how they say, this is just me guessing, I'm making this up. You know how they say that, you know, the death by 1,000 cuts?
Yep.
Right? It's that there's 1,000 little tiny things that don't poke you with a sharp stick in the eye over the course of your day.
Yeah.
Like, let me give you an example. I set up my machine here and I realized I needed to get some clocks up for my team because I don't know the different time zones of the various people in my team. Okay?
That's fair.
So I've just installed Windows and I'm like, oh, I need some clocks. So this is a true story. So I hit the start menu and I type in clock, and then it says add clocks for different time zones. That's like the second option. Swear to God.
Wow.
Third option, add the clock gadget to the desktop. Fourth, you know, another option, show or hide clock icon on taskbar. Holy mackerel, right?
I got a Vista box here. I'm going to type clocks in
type
and see what it tells
me. And see what happens.
Okay.
This is good. Dun, dun, dun.
I have one. Dun, 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 dun. Yeah. Okay, so I've got some web links.
Okay,
to
exactly.
Things that have the word clock in them,
mm-hmm.
Like the USB tube clock. I have a couple of files of ebooks.
So try typing in RAM.
All right, I type in RAM.
I see show how much RAM is on this computer.
I see iGolf games.
Nice. I also see diagnose your computer's memory problems. So these are the kinds of things. There's just thousands of little things like that. Like the troubleshooters. I always love to give the example of the troubleshooters. What I do is I'll type in troubleshoot. And there's a whole troubleshooting thing. And they're basically these PowerShell packs that will figure out all the kind of stuff that I would have to do for my mom or my dad or my cousin. It does them for me. One of them I actually ended up using recently. I couldn't figure out why my audio wasn't working on stage. I'm sitting there. Why is the audio not working? So I go to the troubleshooter and I click in troubleshoot audio playback, and it goes and it churns for a while and it says, your speakers are not plugged in.
No kidding.
So it knew. They've got, you know, they can tell if speakers are plugged in or not. And another time I did it and it actually said, oh, it was muted. I unmuted it for you.
That's awesome.
It's fantastic.
Troubleshooters actually work.
Troubleshooters. And what's great is that they can be updated. You can write your own troubleshooters. So your IT department can package these things up, these PowerShell packs, and send them out and have troubleshooters for your applications.
Right.
Yeah, that's very cool.
One of the things that I noticed about Win 7 when I was digging into this was, was the network stack. And I think that the impact of the replacement of the Windows 2000 network stack, which is what was in Windows 2000, 2003, 2003 R2, and XP,
right.
They redid it for Vista. And I think we've grossly underestimated the impact that actually had. And one of the big changes they made in Win 7, which I've definitely seen examples of now because I've got a laptop running Win 7, is that in Vista, if you suspended, when you came back up, it reinitialized the entire network stack. From scratch.
Oh, really? So new IP, new everything.
It would go and renegotiate everything. Just presume I'm in a different world, start over. And that, the big thing there is basically, you know, that network stack owns your machine, right? When it says I'm busy for a minute, you're busy for a minute. Like there's nothing you can do really. That's one of the reasons I think Outlook just goes out the window is that the Vista network stack would take off.
Yeah. It's frustrating how putting a single byte on the wire is a blocking call for a quad proc machine with 12 gigs of RAM.
Yeah. It totally, you know, it's just, it owns it too much. And in Win 7, they've changed that now where they don't, they make a much more progressive failure of, do we still have that SSID? Do we still have this domain? Like, so just give a chance to stay where you are so
you know,
that you stay responsive.
It's funny that you say that because another example of something that is, noticeably different, but only because it sucked before was that I always told people that the difference between a Mac and a Windows machine is that you can close a Mac and trust that it'll fall asleep.
Yes.
But when you close a Windows machine, it's always like trying to peek at the light in your refrigerator. You know, you close it and you like open it and you close it and you open it. Is it going to sleep? Is it going to sleep? You know that someone's running a PC because they get about, you know, get down to about 20 degrees or about to close the thing and then they wait. Why haven't you closed your laptop? Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what it's doing. It may not shut down. Windows 7, I can actually close the laptop and feel confident that it's not going to freak out. Hey, everybody. This is Scott coming at you from another place in time. Summer is peaking and our friends at Telerik are working at full steam. They've just released the Q2 volume of the Telerik Premium Collection for .NET, the biggest release yet. It's packed with new things that'll excite anyone who's got to do anything with .NET development, starting with Silverlight and the introduction of the first commercial 3D chart in the market. It's developed as a true vector 3D, which gives you nice performance and rich capabilities with rotation and animations. Also, the Silverlight Scheduler, which is packed with even more features than the first version. Telerik's flagship, RAD Controls for ASP.NET Ajax, grows in this release, not only with four new controls, but also with new productivity tools. There's the new Visual Style Builder, an online application that allows you to visually modify skins or even design new ones with just point and click. If that's not enough, they've added a completely new product, a free testing framework powered by Art of Test for automating Ajax and Silverlight-rich internet applications. I'm short on time, so I can't give you all the new features and enhancements in Telerik Reporting, Open Access ORM, or WinForms, but I encourage you to check out all of these products at Telerik.com. Thanks.
Yeah, I think we're finally getting to this point where the mobile stuff works, really.
Yeah.
But it
was worth the 15-year wait, don't you think?
It's been so hard. Still, the other thing that's fascinating me here is that are we really going to get to a 64-bit desktop routine?
Oh, yeah. I think we will. It's going to be the next one. I'm sure it will. Because it's a 64-bit server now, right? Windows Server 2008 R2 is 64-bit only. Is that
right?
Correct?
Well, and as it should be. There's no reason in the world not to make servers 64-bit. But desktops, I think you still struggle a bit with desktops behaving well. Do we need this? There's so many applications. I think that's the big thing with servers is you could still generally count on your fingers how many apps you have on a given server, and that's just not true in a desktop machine.
Yeah.
Of course, for me, the real fence post here is Office. When Office is 64-bit, then I will believe.
Well, there, you know, there is a 64-bit Office 14.
I've heard rumor to that effect, but
no,
I have not seen
it. No, it's not rumor.
I've
run it.
Okay.
I have run it, which is great because it lets Outlook use gigs of memory. It really opens it up.
The question is Outlook actually memory constrained? Is that why it's killing me?
No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. What we really need is for it to have several network stacks.
Yeah. I don't know why. Outlook has trouble because multi-threading is hard, is what I've decided.
I tend to agree. I'm sorry I keep referencing other shows here, but I think at the end of the show we did a DNR with Jeff Richter, he made me fire up Task Manager, throw the threads on, and then sort by, you know, most threads, and Outlook had 65 threads running.
Yeah, that's hard work.
And yeah, that's a lot of threads. And then I thought, and then my next thought was, and apparently none of them are for me.
Oh, really? You don't get like 62 of them?
Yeah. It was still that point where I can't type email. Right.
I'm going to do this right now. I'm bringing up the number of threads.
Yeah. This is a good thing to know.
There you go. Outlook 55, Office Communicator 47, MSN Messenger 40, Chrome 25. Yeah, it looks like being on the network, every one of these is on the network. So iTunes 25.
And it strikes me that developers are reflexively throwing their network connection off on its own thread or two because they know it's blocking, and still somehow they're getting blocked.
See, I'm looking down at the bottom here. Kenny Kerr's window clippings. It's a screenshot application, two threads. And nice. I respect Kenny that much more now.
Yeah. I only took
this is
the
scary.
Threads he needed.
My sticky note application, the one that does my post-its on my screen, 8 threads. I think it's time for a multi-threading show because I've seen some really amazing stuff though coming in .NET 4 that's going to make threading a lot easier. You've heard about like the parallel extensions.
Oh yes, and the transactional memory too. I'm excited about that.
Right, and then the task factory. I've seen people write really sophisticated multi-threading code without actually saying the word thread.
Nice,
which is pretty cool.
Well, I think this is where we need to go. We need to make this more transparent to the regular developer that it happens naturally. Describe what you want to have happen. I'll deal with the threads. I had meant to, because you've talked about it several times, but I've never really heard the whole story of your obsession around this arcade machine you built.
I don't know. Basically, it was less about the arcade machine and more about a personal declaration to become handy.
Right.
Remember this?
You're actually using power tools and keeping all your fingers.
Yeah, well, most, I mean, nine. I mean, you have extra fingers, right? That's why they're given 10.
The spares.
Yeah, you could lose 3-4 fingers and really still be a lot more productive. You use less punctuation when you type, but you're still deeply productive. My emails start to look like E.E. Cummings poems for the 4 people who got that reference. But, my father is handy. I did a show with my dad for those listeners who have not heard the legendary Scott Interviews His Dad show. And he is one of these kind of like, he's a man with like these big beefy hands, like bunches of bananas. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
He just like, you know how you see basketball players who can like palm a basketball and pick it up? You know, he could do that with your head. He could like literally pick you up by the top of your head.
I have a pretty big head.
Fingers like bananas. So he's very handy. My brother also is handy. He lives on a farm. There's hay is being thrown around and, brows are being wiped. Just general things that I'm not familiar with. And I just said one day, you know, I'm going to stop hiring handymen and having people come over where I pay them to emasculate me in front of my family. Cause that's effectively what it is, right? You tell yourself you're too busy, but ultimately it's because you're not handy. So I get some power tools, and actually my friend John Batdorf introduced me to a friend who gave me some power tools. So I've got the power tools with batteries, you know, like you always have like 4 batteries and you're rotating the rechargeable batteries.
Right.
So we put up a square foot garden. I did 96 square feet of gardening space. So if you ever need a ton of lettuce, we have more lettuce than apparently really one thing of lettuce is enough for a family of 4.
Yeah.
But 36 square feet of lettuce.
A little bit much.
Poor planning on my part, really.
Well, it's just exciting. The thing about lettuce is that it grows.
Well, it's amazing how little you need to put on top of a taco. And then the rest is like, oh, there's a head of lettuce we just threw away. Anyway, it was wildly successful. I made like all of 9 cuts with a circular saw to make this thing happen. And then I was like, oh, well, I've done this now. I've cut wood 9 times. It's time to make an arcade machine. That was like the clear transition.
Obvious leap, yeah, from lettuce to Firefox.
Where else could I have gone with that?
Yeah.
So I was poking around and I put together, basically I was going to build one. I got this book called Project Arcade. And it's like an arcade games for dummies thing. And it has a PDF inside. And I was going to go and cut all this wood. And then I went on Craigslist and found a guy who had an old arcade machine that was not one that you'd want to save. It wasn't like Pac-Man or Donkey Kong. It was video arcade trivia something, you know. It was not a classic. So right. Then I decided, well, am I going to go the kit car way where I'm going to build a Porsche, but it's not really a Porsche. It's just made of plastic. And it's like running on like a Toyota Tercel. Or do I go and find a classic car and revitalize it. So I took the revitalization route, and I took this old machine, and I sanded it down with an orbit sander, and I primed it and painted it twice, and rehooked up the lights on the coin slots so that they would light up. I felt very, very EE 101 about that. That was thrilling. You know, you need a resistor when you do that, I've discovered. Yeah.
Get the
See
light.
How I'm Come using on. Buzzwords like that?
Oh, you're living on the edge, man.
Oh, I am. The last thing I remember at EE was I made a digital clock when I was like 19, and that was pretty much the extent of my knowledge around, you know. I can say amps and ohms and tell, like, you know, I can pretty much tell you what's the difference between them. But yeah, it was cool. I put a computer into this box, and I hooked up a flat-screen monitor, and now I can play Doom or Bejeweled or whatever the wife wants to play. Basically, I've made a computer case that looks a lot like an arcade machine.
Yeah, it's like a kiosk type machine, really.
Ooh, that is exactly what it is. I've made a kiosk.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, and there's a whole, you know, kind of underground of people who do like arcade games and stuff. And there's that whole thing.
Well, there's a level of crazy about arcade machines that is, you know, kind of stunning. That's what I love about the internet. Every time I feel like a weirdo, just go online for a little while. You know, you'll find people way further out than you ever thought you could go.
Really?
Even in water cooling. And now I know I'm obsessed about water cooling. I found a guy who'd hooked up his pool to cool his machines.
Really?
And I'm like, I talked to him. I sent him an email. And it just felt me, made me feel so much better.
I know you're into that water cooling stuff. That's so scary to me.
It's water cooling is good, man. It's my computers are quiet. That's
but
all
water
I have
cooling
to say.
Is great until your computer is underwater.
Yeah, well, done that.
You have there. Done that. Aha.
Absolutely.
See, this is the seething underbelly of the water cooling community that you don't hear about.
I would not call it the seething underbelly. Having a catastrophic water incident, not a big deal. The real seething underbelly of water cooling is collapsed hoses. Suddenly water won't pump anymore. Occasional failed pump. But I think the biggest thing is the quarterly water top-up. That every 3 months or so, I got to go around and take the little caps off my reservoirs and top up with demineralized water.
You are topping up your computer. I do not want to change the oil on my computer. It's bad enough that I open the thing every half decade and find that, dust bunnies have decided to open up shop inside the thing.
Right.
There's more dust than there is computer parts. I don't think I want to change the oil.
I have no dust in my machines at all because I have no fans in my machines. So my machines are pristine and clean, but I do have to pour water into them on a routine basis.
You're going to have to speak up. I can't hear you over the sound of the fans and the computers in my office. Yeah. It's like living inside a jet engine.
Yep.
Yeah, I know.
Well, and I, you know, I share my office with my wife, right? Whom you've met, and she appreciates the fact that the office is quiet. There's no noise in here. We just don't have any fans.
Wow. That's pretty slick.
There's some value there, without a doubt.
Yeah. Do you have an arcade machine?
I do not. I don't have the arcade machine obsession. I have friends who do like Pac-Man restorations, which just like the automobile type restorations, they're obsessed with nothing but original parts.
Right.
And that whole thing. And I got a friend who actually has one of the original Pac-Mans, which was a tabletop machine, not an upright.
Oh, right. They're called cocktail machines.
Yeah. The cocktail machines, which are the original ones. And yeah, no, he's very obsessed. It's a kind of a, he's got a, he built an outbuilding to hold his arcade machines.
Really? That's cool.
That is a threshold. Once you've poured concrete for your hobby, you're serious.
You know, and that's funny. I'm actually thinking of pouring concrete to make a little house for the boys to play in.
There you go.
No, I mean, I think that they, you know, what little kid doesn't deserve a tiny house next to your house that looks like the same house but smaller?
I think that's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And then, of course, you get to exercise this handiness in building a structure and doing the walls and building a roof and all of that good stuff. Mm-hmm. And your kids get this great little house.
Well, yeah. And then they also remember their dad as being amazing and having hands the size of of bananas.
Somehow you will grow the banana fingers along the way. Have you considered the idea that banana fingers may be a natural consequence of too much hammering?
I don't know, but this man is he's probably 40% callous. You know what I mean? It's almost like a personal armor that like guys over 60 get. You know, I mean, when you shake their hand and you try to like look them straight in the eye and give it a good squeeze till they don't think that you're a wimp, you know, but they can't even feel it through the calluses.
Yeah. Oh, you got my hand?
Seriously, if I ever quit computers, I got to do something with my hands. It's got to be, I want to be one of those guys with a really cool story about how I lost my ring finger while I was, you know, roofing.
Nice.
Because you never hear about that, you know. Yeah, man, I was coding an APL, man, and it took the pinky right off. Look at that.
Took the ring right off.
You know, nobody has that story when they're, you know.
Not so much.
Because our industry is based, like, entirely on, you know, the sin of sloth.
I've done enough hardware work that I've certainly drawn blood, you know. Blood on the rack. That could be a book title.
You know, actually, I've sliced myself open pretty good doing a... in opening up cases and stuff, that stuff's like razor in there. But when you go looking for sympathy,
yeah, not so much.
You go to the wife, you're like, oh, I just cut myself, I'm bleeding all over the computer. It's like, what kind of idiot are you? Right. Although, you know, roofing accidents somehow seem more manly,
far more acceptable. Yeah. You're outside.
And when I mean manly, I don't in any way to mean to excuse the ladies that are listening as well
that want to do their own roofing.
I mean manly in a non-gender specific way.
There you go.
If that's possible.
Okay, I believe you.
You're handy, though. You do this stuff, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I've done a lot of case alterations, and I'm pretty comfortable fixing a dishwasher and that sort of thing, but I give up on the lawn. The lawn was the one where I mowed it for a year and then thought, wow, for the price of like a quarter of an article, I can have somebody do this for me every month.
Yeah, see, I'm deep into that right now. I used to have a guy that did the lawn, and now I got a really great lawnmower, and I'm using it. I think I'm going to mow the lawn. It's the killing of wasps that I'm ready to outsource.
Right.
Because, man, you want to hear me scream like a small child, you know, and have me notice a wasp's nest. I don't mess around like that. And I'm going to outsource that completely.
My general contractor comes into the house the other day, 3 days ago or so, and just said, hey, you got any Benadryl? And I'm like, yeah, I got some Benadryl. Why, Bob? He says, oh, I just got stung a few times. I walked into a wasp nest, and I'm kind of allergic. So if you had some Benadryl, that'd be good. Otherwise, I got to go to the hospital.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, and literally that comment, I'm like, well, let me find that Benadryl quickly for you while you puff up. And dug her out and said, you probably should go for the double dose there, Bob.
Dude, if I had a wasp, if I got bit by a bee or wasp or anything like that, you would be hearing about it for weeks.
So the kicker, he literally took the Benadryl, went back to work, wow, got stung again the next day, and then found the wasp nest and took it out.
That's epic.
Yeah. No, these guys, you know, I don't know that we can get there, Scott. We guys who really work outside are just...
I don't think it's possible. Yeah. I think that there's a special kind of individual who can pull something like that off, and I know that is not me, and that's okay. Yeah. But I want to find the equivalent wasp's nest story. You know, I was in soft ice.
There you go.
I was deep into ring zero. what's the wasp nest equivalent story?
I don't know. I recently went through a serious debugging cycle around a RAID controller.
Mm-hmm. What happened?
If you care. I don't know.
Well, only if it ends with wasps or Benadryl.
It ended with me cursing. That's all.
Yeah? Let's hear it, and then we'll call that a minutia.
And I've been an Adaptec guy for a long time. I've got probably half a dozen different Adaptec controllers in various machines in the server closet.
Okay. So you're debugging a RAID controller.
I was building a new machine, Windows 2008, and the controller in question was a 2610, or 2810, which is not brand new. It's a couple of generations old, and there are drivers built into 2008 for it, but Adaptec, in their infinite wisdom, has chosen not to make a client for it.
A client meaning an application that allows you to edit it.
Yeah, actually configure the RAID array and so forth, all that good stuff. So you have to do this all in BIOS, which...
When you mean BIOS, you mean like hit delete or hit F2 and go into their BIOS?
Yeah, you actually hit Control A during the boot up sequence, and that drops into the BIOS of the controller to do the configuring, which is incredibly annoying when you're actually, you know, running a proper rack closet where I don't normally physically access the machine. It's 15 feet away from me. It's in a air-conditioned, soundproof closet. I don't want to go over there. I want to do it all from here, but you have to do it in the closet because you're in BIOS, or I could go so far as to set up a serial access, but that's just excessive. So there I am, you know, messing around with the BIOS, start the build, and I'm like, okay, it's building. It'll be recognized now. It'll take a few hours to finish building, but I'll just boot into Windows, and it'll finish while I'm setting other things up. And then the drive letter appears. Everything works fine. You start loading stuff onto it. It's slow, of course, because it's still building, but yeah, nothing bad. And the next morning I go check on the machine thinking, you know, that build's probably finished by now. Let's just see how it is. And when I get to the machine and take a look at it, that drive is gone. It's just vanished.
Really?
That's not good. So I can't look at the array from Windows because there's no client. So I have to go to physically to the machine, open up the door, stand in front of the air conditioner, pull out my KVM, say my 1U, you know, keyboard and screen, boot the machine, and watch the BIOS screen come up. And it goes, oh, there's array has been compromised. Rebuilding. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, something weird happened there. I'll just let it rebuild. So I, you know, finish the boot, go back to Windows, drive letters there again. Everything seems to be okay. Tinker around for a while. Mm-hmm. Fine, this is fine. Come back the next day, drive letters gone again. And have you ever noticed how bad it is when you don't have confidence in your servers?
Well, this is the thing. You've had this situation where you buy a machine, you unpack it, you don't want to use the default OS. Maybe you want to put something else that's crazy on it, right?
Yeah.
So then you run that new crazy thing. Like, for an example would be, I buy my wife a Dell. Before she, you know, gets wind of it, I try to put Windows 7 on the thing, like an early, early beta of Windows 7, right?
Nice.
Thing reboots, and then blue screens. Okay. Now, at this point, because she's seen a blue screen once, even though I was running some random daily build of some random thing, right? She can't trust it.
Yep.
She's seen it blue screen once. And the earlier it blue screens in the relationship that you have with this machine, the less you trust it.
Yeah. Well, it's just like infidelity. Once you've blue screened once, you can never go back.
It's true. You can never trust it. And then you'll pull the memory out and you'll remove whatever you think that was, but you'll never know. And you'll always, the mouse, have you ever had it where you're moving the mouse and it freezes and then you throw your hands up like you're being arrested straight up in the air because getting your hands off the mouse quickly enough will prevent whatever
might help that
coming blue screen.
Don't do it. Well, and we remember this from Windows 3.1, right? Where you mm-hmm. could feel the blue screen coming, right? The machine would start behaving a certain mm-hmm. way. You're like, oh, yep. I better save yep. now because we're going to be going down.
Yep. I remember I used to use a disk flushing tool. You know, it's coming soon. Quick, flush C, flush, flush.
Flush everything down. Get ready because here we go.
Get those write caches handled or you're in trouble.
It's so a shame. Wrestling with my RAID array crisis, I've gone around a couple of times now. Mm-hmm. So finally I'm like, all right, I'm not sure what's happened on this rebuild cycle. And of course, it's a big array, so it mm-hmm. takes a whole day to build. So now I boot it into the BIOS, I leave it there, and actually let the whole build go by and walk away, come back. And I come back, and it's finished the build, but instead of saying, 100%, it says, card kernel stopped. And that's all it says.
Card kernel stopped.
Yeah.
So you panicked in the little firmware of this card.
For some reason, the card has decided it's no longer running, which, of course, if you did that while the machine was actually up in Windows, the drive letter just goes away. But as soon as you hit, when you're in the BIOS, as soon as you hit a key, it forces a reboot on the machine, which kicks the kernel back on again, and then it goes through the rebuild cycle.
Yikes.
So this was one of those errors where it got to 100% and then it would fail.
So how do you know it's them, though? Because I always assume it's me. Whatever it is.
Well, I still didn't know it was them. All I knew is now the kernel on the card was failing. So first thing I'm thinking is, I've done something wrong. What could it be I've done wrong? You still haven't fixed it. You just know it's going through this whole build cycle before it's failing. So I went check to see if I have the latest firmware. Mm-hmm. Yeah, got the latest firmware. They haven't updated the firmware at all. And go look at the drive configuration. That's just sort of chasing around all of these little different tidbits. And came to the conclusion that the drives themselves were too large for the controller.
That seems like something that your first web search would have found, right?
Yeah. See, the error was actually, when I searched on the error, it's a totally generic error. It's an error that's caused the controller has failed. And the error was that we flipped the overflow bit. When it actually finished building the array and went to write out the value of the completed array, it went, this is too big. Boom.
Wow.
So I switched. It was a RAID 5 array that mm-hmm. was with over 4 terabytes. And I switched it to a RAID 10 array that's under 2.
And then it worked just fine.
It just came up like nothing to it. Huh. Of course, I've now summarized in 5 minutes something that took me a week and much cursing to figure out.
Well, you should summarize it in a two-word blog post so that someone can find it the next time they search for it, because at this point, they're never going to find it here.
No, they're not going to find it. Well, we're going to do a transcript, right?
Yeah, but they'll screw it up. I mean, they're not going to be able to spell Adaptech.
Adaptech.
Even though they're listening to us right now. We're actually having a conversation now one way with the transcriber.
Yeah, we're Hello. Talking to the transcriber. Please Here's spell how you Adaptech spell Adaptech. A-D-A-P-T-E-C.
It's difficult, though.
Yeah, it's not an obvious spelling. But it also sort of, it's interesting how Adaptech has set us up. I should replace that controller. That's the real answer.
Well, you can't trust it.
Yeah, how would I know now, right? The controller is obviously overwhelmed by terabyte hard drives. It needs to be replaced.
You know, terabyte's just not that big anymore.
It's disturbing, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, I've been shooting all this HD video, and I just did a thing with Phil Hack. What did I got? 15 minutes? It was a gig. You know, 15 minutes of high-def video for a gigabyte of space.
But a terabyte is still 1,000 of those.
1,000 15 minutes, right? That's, what is that, like 2 seasons of Seinfeld? Who knows? I mean, that's not a lot of space. I've got 2.5 terabytes in my Windows home server, and it's just, I'm feeling cramped.
You're feeling closed in.
I am.
Uncomfortable.
It's difficult. I collect a lot of garbage.
That's 250 hours, right?
Oh, yeah, right. That is a pretty long time.
It's a lot. That's a lot of stuff, right? That's 10 seasons. That is all of Seinfeld.
It really is enabling hoarding caught at like a cultural level. Like, we already were hoarders, people that collected too much stuff, collectors.
And at the same time, we're talking about everything's digital now, so nothing's permanent. So, you know, there'll be no record of anything we did. You know, when the archaeologists...
Yeah, that's a really good point. When the archaeologists dig up your hard drive, they're going to be like, oh, the RAID controller doesn't handle drives this size.
Not this small. I can't get this to work. Like, this is
only,
too small.
If only those primitive peoples knew that an Adaptech couldn't handle a drive over a terabyte. Thank goodness our advanced technology has discovered this.
Both the wife and I are serious about resisting hoarding. We built a storage room in the renovation with the idea that when that storage room is full and you have more stuff to put in it, throw something away or give it away. Like, that's it. We live in fear of filling our garage with stuff and not parking cars in it. And so we built a storage room for the purpose.
So wait a second. Your solution was to build a storage room. My wife and my solution was that if we haven't physically touched something in 2 years, it goes away. We get rid of it. When I say get rid of it, I mean we give it away.
Yeah, give it away, give it to charity, something. Well, that's what we've done with the storage room is it accumulates to that point. And then when it is full, you go through it and say, you know, this is still in the box we put it in when we moved here 10 years ago. You sure we need it?
Yeah, that is pretty bad. That's pretty messed up.
It's funny. And I'm thinking the same way with data, man. It's just going through and trying to keep these things under control. How many terabytes do you personally need?
Yeah, you really don't need a lot. I mean, if you just count video, it's really about family photos, right? You know, I've talked about this before when I say that you should have an escape drive. You know, when they say the house is on fire or whatever, grab your escape drive and run, you know.
Yeah.
4 gigs, 8 gigs, major family photos, scans of your documents, scans of all your ID, your passport, all that kind of stuff. Password, protect it with TrueCrypt, and then run.
And be able to walk out the door. I the other day I looked at the folder on my server where every article I ever written, all of the original text and so forth within, that's like 470 articles in 15 years, 150 megs.
Right, because it's just text.
It's text. Yeah. Even with the screenshots, it's 150 megs.
Scandalous.
It's just, the stuff that's actually important on these drives is really small.
Well, we're not going to solve these problems today.
No.
So let's leave it there, my friend.
Okay.
All right. Well, this has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and in this case, Hansel Minutia with Richard Campbell.
Yes, it has been.
It has been, and it will be again.
Thanks.
All right. We'll see you again next week.